All right, welcome back to the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. We're joined now by Matthew Derrick of Chiefs Digest. Talk about the Chiefs, of course, the big win as they knocked off the Baltimore Ravens in the AFC title game in Baltimore, 17-10. Matthew, it's always great to talk to you. It's even better when we're talking about the Chiefs going to the Super Bowl for the fourth time in 5 years. Somebody pinch me. I never thought this would happen in my lifetime after all of the horrible playoff disappointments and weird things happening to the Chiefs. I could go through those, but there's no need. It would take an hour. And I was just hoping the Chiefs would make it to one Super Bowl or at least win one Super Bowl in my lifetime. And now it's kind of like, ho-hum, here are the Chiefs in the Super Bowl again.
Yeah, it's old hat. It's just what they do. Generation of Chiefs fans growing up are not going to be going up like you and me. That, mm-hmm. Just not winning football games and knowing not getting the feeling of what it's like to win the big one. It's going to be a kind of a spoiled generation of Chiefs fans, and I'm happy for them.
Yeah, me too, no question. And I've been seeing this for a while. I was telling you a little bit before we went on the air that I've been more optimistic than a lot of people that I know that are Chiefs fans. Oh, no, our receivers are horrible. We can't win with this receiving core. And we've got this problem. We've got that problem. All the penalties, the drops, the turnovers. Mahomes not playing as well. Our tackles have some issues. And going on and on and on. And I said, you know, maybe it's possible that maybe this is a theory that I have, is that I'm not saying the Chiefs weren't trying during the regular season, but I think we've seen this in sports over the years. We've seen it in the NBA with the Warriors and even, you know, the Bulls and the Rockets and the Lakers and probably the Celtics. And you know, I think we've seen it with the Patriots from time to time. And that is that when you go so deep in the playoffs, you've been there, you've done that. The regular season can become a little bit mundane. And if it does become a little bit mundane, perhaps you don't have as sharp of an edge. Maybe you're not quite as focused, even though you're focused and you're trying. But then all of a sudden the playoffs, when it's do or die and the season's on the line, suddenly MVS is making incredible catches. Travis Kelce's not dropping the ball. The tackles aren't having some of these dumb penalties. The Chiefs aren't turning the ball over. It's almost as if the Chiefs have known all along, we're good. We're not great, but we're just going to pace ourselves. And once there's a sense of urgency, we're going to kick it in. And it seems like that's what they've done.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, there's no doubt. Every team that's on the Chiefs' schedule week in and week out in the regular season, almost without fail, the other team has more motivation that week. I mean, you know, there's certain games. Hey, if you're a sub-500 team, and you're playing the Chiefs, that's your Super Bowl.
Yes.
I mean, that's your chance to, you know, to get a signature win and feel pretty good about yourself. But that's the case. I mean, you know, as far as the energy level that you're going to face, you can't match the opponent every single week when you're the team that's being hunted, that you have the target on your back. And, you know, I think the thing about this team has always been that Andy Reid's been such a great coach at really keeping this group from peaking too early, even though, you know, he's been usually so good in September and, you know, coming out of the gate in pretty good shape. You know, it always seems like, hey, once the calendar turns to December, this team really gets focused. And mm-hmm. That's the only thing that really confused me this year, was that calendar turns to December and this team didn't find that extra gear. It wasn't until after that Raiders loss on Christmas Day that the wake-up call came to kick in. Calendar turned to January, and then this team finally seemed to find its groove. And, you know, and now that it's had it, I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, it seems like a switch has absolutely flipped. This is not the same team that we saw kind of sleepwalking through parts of November and December. This is the Chiefs team that you usually see come playoff games.
Is part of the equation, and I used the analogy yesterday on the show, that the regular season is a tool for coaching staffs. And what I mean by that is we see it in all sports where you have a regular season game, you might have a comfortable lead, you might be behind, you decide to wave the white flag, or you're comfortably ahead and you know you can play some different guys, or you know your season's not on the line, and you know it's a marathon, not a sprint. And so you give different people opportunities because you think there are going to be important pieces to the puzzle, but you fully don't know until they go out there and perform or fail. And I use the analogy with basketball that you might have a 9-player rotation, But Matthew, when you get to tournament time in college or in high school, or you get to the NBA playoffs, that rotation shrinks and the coaches go with the players they trust. They absolutely trust. And if they have any doubt about you, you're probably not going to play very much. I think the Chiefs are similar in that way. Is, you know, fans are screaming, why is Sky Moore on the field? Why is Mecole Hardman on the field? Why is Kadarius Toney on the field? Why is this guy on the field? They're making these mistakes. Bench Juwan Taylor, so forth and so on. And now when we see the Chiefs starting to hit their strides, we notice that it's Pacheco getting the ball. It is Rice getting the ball. It is Kelsey getting the ball. MVS, even though you maybe didn't trust him in the regular season, has some credibility with how he's played in the playoffs a year ago and in the Super Bowl. And so you go with the guys you trust, and suddenly Kadarius Toney is not active. Sky Moore is on the IR. Mecole Hardman, after the fumble at Buffalo at the goal line, is more of a decoy running in motion. Do you buy into that?
I do. I mean, I think that, I don't think there's any doubt that you look at it, and sometimes it's different. I mean, in some cases, you know, depending on the situation, maybe you widen the bench a little bit, you know, widen the rotation to keep guys fresh. You know, I think that along the defensive line, they certainly have done that. But at other spots, you know, I think receiver was especially the one that you saw that happen at was, you know what, okay, hey, it's crunch time. This is the moment when it matters. And now it is. It's time to shorten the bench. So the guys who are going to play are the guys who are making plays. So, you know, yeah, Rashee Rice is going to get all the snaps, all the ones that you can give him. Other guys are going to filter in. And, you know, and you stick with what you do best. And for this Chiefs team, that has meant a lot of multiple tight end sets in the playoffs. So you have seen a lot more of Noah Gray and even Blake Bell. You've seen fewer receivers on the field. And that's just, to me, it's a little bit of the Chiefs just leaning on their best material. I mean, the greatest hits. That's the one thing I think has been constant over the last month or so has been just that the Chiefs, even with the playbook, have just kind of streamlined it to say, you know what, the time for testing is over. You know, this is where we are only going to run the stuff and we're only going to call the plays that we know that these guys can execute. And it's going to be the plays that have worked in the past. So this, I mean, this has kind of felt like, you know, it's a band on tour doing their 30th anniversary album, you know.
I like that.
I mean, because, you know, even like, you know, hey, Travis Kelce a couple weeks ago talked about scoring a touchdown on a play that was the same one that they ran in 2015 in London against the Lions. I mean, they are. That's kind of what they're doing, is they're just leaning on what they do best right now and not, it's, you know, just widening the playbook, widening the bench, not what they're doing. They're focusing on who can make plays, and they're focusing on the stuff that works.
It's definitely working. I'm Matthew Derrick of Chiefs Digest, our guest today, talking Chiefs football. The Chiefs, of course, moving on to Super Bowl 58 against the San Francisco 49ers, a rematch of Super Bowl 54 that the Chiefs won and pulled out in the fourth quarter. We'll have it for you on Z96.3 The Lake. What surprised you the most about the win in Baltimore? I was optimistic the Chiefs would go in and win, and I was way more positive about the Bills game. I really loved the matchup against Buffalo and the first road game for Mahomes. I had a feeling they'd have a chip on their shoulder. Baltimore concerned me way more, but I thought they'd find a way to pull it out, and I thought if you could somehow put Lamar Jackson in a situation where the game's resting on his right arm, you like your chances, and that's exactly what happened. What surprised you the most about the win in Baltimore for the Chiefs?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it was really how Baltimore responded.
Yeah.
They did not respond well to being in a deficit. They fell down by 7 points, and they all of a sudden went against their own DNA. They went against their own identity. The fact that Gus Edwards only got 3 touches and that they just were not leaning on their own run game really stunned me. And but it goes back to exactly what you said, which is that Steve Spagnuolo's game plan against Lamar Jackson every single time has always been keep him in the pocket, ensure that he can't scramble, don't give him any lanes, make sure your assignment's sound so that you can force him to beat you by throwing the football. And Baltimore obliged the Chiefs. They trusted, you know, Lamar. They put the game in his hands. They put it on his arm. And it didn't work out because that was exactly what the Chiefs wanted. The Chiefs trusted that their defensive front could keep him in the pocket. They trusted that their secondary could defend all of those targets, that the, because this is, I think, the best group of skill position players Lamar's had around him. There's no doubt. I mean, I think he's arguably the MVP of the season, but the Chiefs absolutely held him in check on Sunday.
You and I have talked about this year when you've been on the show here on the Sports Ticket. I think it was midway through the season, and you and I were talking about the metamorphosis of the Chiefs, that they're doing it differently this year, that the identity of this team is pretty clear-cut, and that is you're going to ride your defense. And it's something that Chiefs fans have a hard time wrapping their arms around because they're used to Mahomes throwing for 5,000 yards or 50 touchdowns or making these insane plays and the Chiefs win 34-31 or whatever the case may be, a rally from these big-time deficits. And I want to ask you this, because to me, the complete sea change, or the beginning of the sea change, the metamorphosis, shall we say, of this team, to me personally, began with the trade of Tyreek Hill. And I remember hearing some sports talk people in Kansas City, I couldn't understand what they were talking about when they said, well, that's it, the window's closed, or the window is closing, we traded Tyreek Hill. And I'm sitting there going, and I remember you were on with me shortly after that, and we both agreed that it very well could be a blessing in disguise if Brett Veach makes the right moves, which he clearly has since then. And now you look at this Chiefs team, and what I predicted, if they did the right things after the Tyreek Hill trade, was that, no, the window's not closing. It's absolutely actually widening to give you more chances to make the Super Bowl, because you can get so many players, you can help on your cap, and you can make your team a more complete team. And to me, that trade kind of started the, you know what, we're not going to find a Tyreek Hill to replace Tyreek Hill. There's only one Tyreek Hill. We get some serviceable wide receivers, and we're going to go ahead and invest those draft picks we got for Tyreek Hill to either move up and get a Trent McDuffie, or use those picks to get a pass rusher, or to get this guy or that guy. And next thing you know, we have a plethora of picks, and now we can hit on some guys, and they've hit on quite a few, even in the late rounds. Do you believe that Tyreek Hill trade now, and we even said it, I think, at the time, now you look back on it and say, would the Chiefs be where they are today had they kept Tyreek Hill? I know that's a hypothetical, but without Tyreek Hill the last 2 years, they've made the Super Bowl. The last year he was on the team, they did not make the Super Bowl.
Yeah, on one point, the defense would not be as good if they still had Tyreek Hill, because they were able to use those draft picks from that draft to go out and get some guys that absolutely have made this defense better. So would they be the number two scoring defense in the NFL this season? No, I don't think that they would. Would the offense be better with Tyreek Hill? Absolutely. I mean, I think it would be. I mean, it would certainly, I think, be more productive and more efficient. But, you know, we talked about, and I remember this is something that I said a lot when the Tyreek Hill trade went down, that it doesn't necessarily mean that the Chiefs are going to be better or worse without Tyreek Hill. They're just going to be different.
Yeah.
And you know, and the offensive problems this year, to me, I think they're only partly related to personnel. I mean, a big part of it is just that the pendulum has swung, and a lot of people just don't realize it. But you look at the numbers, and there's been some discussion about the fact that offense was down around the league this year. Some of it, you know, is talking about, hey, there was a lot of quarterback injuries and the year of the backup. But the reality of it is that, you know, the pendulum has swung back towards the defense. For, you know, we've been through a stretch, and Andy Reid talked about it, you know, that it happens in cycles. And there was a cycle there for a while where offense has just absolutely owned it, because defenses had no idea how to counter these spread concepts and a lot of the things that the Chiefs were just absolutely mastering with Mahomes. Well, in part because defenses had to figure out how to stop Patrick Mahomes, they're figuring out how to stop everybody. You know, the spread concepts, you know, and especially the things that you see with defenses now, you know, mixing and matching as far as, you know, playing man on one side and zone on the other, and really dividing the field up into different sections. And, you know, you're seeing the things that the teams have come up with that have been so good at limiting what the Chiefs love to do. I mean, taking away the back end of the field, and really the philosophy of defense in the NFL today is basically dare teams and challenge them to check the ball down. Make it that the only thing that they really can do is to dump off the ball, throw it short, and just take what defenses are giving them. And it took the Chiefs a while to learn that lesson. I think that was the other thing this season that Andy Reid really did, is that he probably sacrificed some games by just allowing this team to figure out, and this offense and Patrick to figure out what they can't get away with anymore, what they have to do to win. And once they got that wake-up call, and I do think that this entire team across the board got that wake-up call against the Raiders on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
But since then, Patrick Mahomes has played almost flawless football. And a big part of it has been that he is making smart decisions. He's not putting the ball in harm's way. He's been playing just a ball control offense that doesn't take a lot of chances, but just says, okay, if you're the defense and that's what you're going to give me, I'm going to take it. And you just keep pounding away at defenses. Are they taking some shots downfield? Yeah, very judiciously. Not as recklessly and, you know, just seemingly at random or forcing the ball downfield like they did earlier. Now, he's only throwing it deep when he gets specific looks, when he's got what he thinks is a favorable matchup and a coverage. That, to me, is a big part of how this team has evolved, is that this is a style of play that Patrick Mahomes really didn't use, and he didn't have to when he had Tyreek Hill. But now, you know, you don't have a weapon like that. You have to be different. He has evolved.
All right, welcome back. We lost the line there for a moment, but we got Matthew Derrick back of Chiefs Digest. Matthew, as I was saying there before we get interrupted with the dropout, is that I found the game fascinating against the Ravens because the Chiefs came out and they scored the two touchdowns. They looked great offensively, got the big field goal before halftime by Butker, gave him some leeway. The second half, the Chiefs didn't score any points. They took some three and outs, but they didn't turn the ball over, and they rode that defense. And we've seen some times over the years, even Mahomes as quarterback of the Chiefs, where even when the defense isn't as good as this year's unit, Andy Reid has kind of played that conservative, you know, let's put it in the hands of my defense, I'm okay, and Chiefs fans scream, you've got the best quarterback in football, you got to keep the ball in his hands, don't do conservative play on third and five, let's go ahead and end the game with our offense, or go for it on fourth and short. And what I found really, really fascinating is, it was be aggressive offensively, go down, get points, second half, conservative, Mahomes more of a game manager. And you could really argue when it was third and nine on that final play on the pass to MVS to seal the deal, that if there was ever a time for Andy Reid to say, run the ball up the middle, punt it, and let our number two defense seal this thing because it's been so good, you really would have a hard time arguing against it. Instead, he's got Mr. 15, and they throw it deep, and the game is over. Mahomes said at the end of the game, we saw it on TV, on the video, and the highlights, give me the ball, and he made the play. Is that a little bit of evolution of Andy Reid as well? Because he's had good quarterbacks, but not a guy like this, the trust in that situation?
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I've did a story on this, you know, when the Chiefs went to their first Super Bowl. And my assignment that my editor gave me was to write about Andy Reid's playoff disasters and, you know, why he has never been a good postseason coach. And when I started talking to people about the story, you know, the angle of the story changed for me, because what I ended up writing about really was just that, you know, you go back and you look at some of those games, and I went back and looked at, like, you know, the end of their Super Bowl game against the Patriots and how they lost that. And I went back and watched, you know, the fourth quarter of the Chiefs and Patriots with Alex Smith back in 2015. And the thing was is that, you know, it was and no knock against Alex Smith and Donovan McNabb. They were fine quarterbacks. But, you know, they were not Patrick Mahomes. You know, they didn't make the same decisions. They didn't do the same things. They couldn't make the same throws that he does. You know, I don't know that, you know, Donovan McNabb or Alex Smith could have made that throw to MVS, just having the decision-making and the ability to put it where it needed to be. And certainly Andy Reid trusts, you know, Patrick to make those kind of plays. There's no doubt. He knows he's got the talent. He's got the ability physically and mentally to make those plays. But, you know, that's also just, I mean, a really good coaching in the sense that, hey, you kind of get a feel for what the Ravens are going to do on third and nine, that they're probably going to give you a look that's going to be favorable for a big play like that. So take advantage of it. And that, to me, it was an example of great coaching, anticipating what the defense was going to do to give you the look that you want. And great play by Patrick to be able to identify it, find where he wanted to put the football, and delivering it on a dime. And that's what I think, obviously, those two guys do the best.
Absolutely. We are so spoiled, as you said earlier, Chiefs Kingdom is. Mahomes is amazing. But I want to give you an opportunity to say something about Kelce. There are a lot of people who wrote off Travis Kelce. Well, he's washed up. I think that was a little bit too far. Had he slowed down a step? Yeah. Had he been banged up all year? Yeah. We saw it week one against Detroit. They missed Travis Kelce more than Chris Jones in that game. There's no doubt about it. And then at Minnesota, I thought, oh, dear Lord, there's a season-ending injury. And the Chiefs have been fortunate avoiding those gigantic injuries to their star players. But Kelce, you know, he said it, I think, last year on a podcast or something about how he was ready to fast forward the regular season and get in the playoffs because it's just a whole different animal. And he loves to play under the lights, as we know. He likes that attention, and that's a good thing in this instance. And he came through with flying colors, 11 catches, 11 targets, 116 yards, a touchdown catch. What makes Travis Kelce the guy he is and makes him so dang special to do what he did the other day?
Oh man, if I think I knew how to do that, I think if Patrick, even Andy Reid knew what really made Travis special, I think he could make everybody like that. It's hard to put a finger on. I mean, first, you know, one is just that he's got obviously incredible physical talent. There's no doubt about that. And having another, you know, a brother in the NFL, I mean, you know that those genes were good.
Yes.
They were blessed with certain abilities the rest of us may not have. But, you know, I think the other two things that Travis really has, you know, one is that, and it this gets overused a lot in this game, but I think with Travis it absolutely applies. He loves football. Mm-hmm. I mean, he absolutely does. He lives and breathes it. And so I think that obviously helps such a big part of it because, you know, he loves to play, he loves to practice, he loves to watch film, he loves to improve his game. I mean, the fact that he's out there starting tight end U to help other players around the league illustrates that. You talk to anybody on this team that's involved in catching a football, and they'll tell you that Travis helps them, whether it's a receiver, a tight end, a running back, doesn't matter. I mean, he just loves the game. But the other part of it, too, is just the experience. I mean, he has seen everything. You're not going to surprise him. And, you know, I'd asked him a couple of weeks ago, you know, just how long did it really take him to feel comfortable where he could freelance in this offense, where he learned everything to the point where, you know, he then knew that, hey, this is the coverage that I'm facing. So I've got an option here. I can change my route. I can do this. I can cut this off, or I can take this deeper. You know, but based on the way the defense is responding, I can do this instead. And he was honest. I mean, he's like, yeah, it was like year five or six before he really felt that comfortable. But now that he's seen it all, I mean, he knows, you know, his opponents inside and out. He knows the playbook inside and out. He has a way of just kind of manipulating the field and manipulating defenders in ways that other guys can't, and you still see him just, you know, he has that, you know, it used to be the Kelce shimmy that he had, that he just kind of could shake guys off and everything. You know, now he's got that kind of, I don't know what to call it, but, you know, he's got that kind of run back and turn ability that maybe he doesn't have the shimmy anymore, but he's got some other moves, and he always is trying to figure those things out. So I think a big part of it is just how much he loves the game, how much he has played, and how hard he works. I mean, I think all of those go into it.
There has been some talk, and he even brought it up, and I think it was on the New Heights podcast, or been asked a question in an interview about the R word, retirement. His brother Jason Pierce is retiring and is going to be done. He thought about retiring before last year, but the Eagles were so close, and I think that helped push him to play another year. Looks like his brother is going to wrap up a career. Do you think there's anything to that Kelce, if they went out on top and they go back-to-back, and, I mean, that's the dynasty, no doubt, cements it to me if you go back-to-back, and nobody done it in 20 years since the Patriots. Do you think there is a realistic, a decent chance that Travis Kelce would go out on top and hang it up?
I mean, possible, yes. Likely, I don't think so. Yeah. You know, and when we asked him a couple of weeks about it, because, you know, yeah, the R word came up in one of his magazine interviews he did during the off season that finally came out a couple of months later. You know, he said, yeah, I mean, sure, he thinks about it just because he's 34 years old and he knows he kind of has to prepare for the end and it is getting harder. I mean, he's talked a lot. I remember him obviously talking in his podcast once about, you know, how much time he spent in St. Joe and how that just gets tiring after a while in training camp. And there's no doubt he enjoyed training camp, I think, less this year than he ever has. And you watching and getting to see Travis up close behind the scenes, I mean, you can tell the miles have taken their toll. Sure. I mean, he's physically not the same guy that he was. He's past his prime in that sense. And yet he's still the best at his positions because, you know, he is so smart. He is so talented. He does work so hard. He's still better than the guy he's lining up against just because of all those factors. But I don't know. I mean, everything that I've said about him loving the game, I think, is why I think it's going to be hard for him to walk away. Even though he's got a lot of other opportunities off the field now that he didn't have maybe 12 months ago or 24 months ago, so maybe that calculates things a little differently. Obviously, his personal life is different now, the situation. But I kind of feel like, you know, Travis Kelce without football, I think is going to be a hard life for him to adjust to. So I think that Andy Reid's probably going to encourage him to take as much time this offseason to just give it a thought. I mean, you know, one thing that Travis has always done is that when he's healthy, he has always been there during the offseason. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he took some time off. You know, didn't go to the optional OTA, the voluntary program. Maybe the Chiefs give it more time off during training camp. I mean, there's options and things you can do. I mean, Travis Kelce's never been on an injury report for vet rest. I mean, he hasn't hit that point in his career yet. Maybe he needs to.
Yeah.
I think the Chiefs would accommodate him in any way that he wants to if he wants to keep playing. And I think in his heart of hearts, he wants to keep playing.
Most worrisome injury that the Chiefs have right now to you going into Super Bowl 58, what's the most worrisome injury that the Chiefs are dealing with?
I mean, I think Joe Tooney is obviously the biggest one. You know, going up against the 49ers, they are a tough defense. And I mean, Joe Tooney's an all-pro. There's no doubt. I mean, he's the best player that they've got that's injured right now. You can't just take an all-pro out of your offensive line and think they're going to be just fine and dandy with no changes. Nick Allegretti is a great player. I love Allegretti. But is he Joe Tooney? No. I mean, he's a different kind of player. So you have to adjust things. You have to do things differently. So that's the one. I think that if you could wave a magic wand and get Joe Tooney healed, that would be the guy. I mean, you know certain things. You know you're not going to have Derek Nnadi. You know you're not going to have Charles Omenihu. There's nothing there. You know, I know some people will say Willie Gay is a concern, and Willie is. I mean, I think you'd like to make sure that you had Willie Gay healthy. But there's no doubt. I mean, any time that you can get an all-pro on the field, that's the one you need.
Yeah, and Drew Tranquil's done a great job in place of Bolton when he was hurt, and obviously Willie Gay made some amazing plays against Baltimore in the AFC title game. Real quickly, what about this Kadarius Toney drama? I mean, it seems like nonsense. I mean, I understand he probably wants to play in the Super Bowl, and he feels like he's apparently healthy enough to play, but he's had lots of things he's put on social media in the past, and the Giants got tired of dealing with it. Do you think there's any chance whatsoever Kadarius Toney's suited up and is active to play in the Super Bowl?
I mean, there's clearly a chance, but I'm really interested to see how both, you know, Tony and the Chiefs respond to this. I mean, you know, they've got 2 days of media availabilities this week, and I think if Kadarius Toney is going to be on the plane on Sunday, I think he's got to come out there and talk about this and just address what he said, what he meant, explain it. If an apology is necessary, then apologize if what he said was inaccurate in any way or he didn't express himself well. I mean, we've also been down the road where things have been posted in the past on Kadarius' social media accounts, and he said it wasn't him. So, you know, there's a lot of possible explanations here. But the thing that you do not want during a Super Bowl week is a distraction.
Yep.
And that is the thing. And if Kadarius Toney does not address this situation, the team, the players don't address this situation on Thursday and Friday, they're going to be addressing it all 4 days next week. And especially with the national media, and there will be plenty of New York media at the Super Bowl, and they're absolutely going to want to talk about it. And you just can't have that. You can't have 50 reporters standing around Kadarius Toney, you know, wanting to know about this. He needs to be able to get his side of the story out this week, and say what it is. And so when questions are asked next week, we can just bypass it and say, you know what, I've already addressed that. Go back to what I said Thursday. You'll get everything you need. That's what he has to be able to do. And that's if the Chiefs put him on the plane. I mean, obviously there are scenarios where he doesn't.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see what happens in really the next 48 to 72 hours.
I think he won't be part of it. I don't think he'll be allowed to be a distraction. That's what I think. I could be wrong. And you mentioned distractions you don't want to have around the Super Bowl week. You think back to before the Chiefs, the last time they were trying to go back-to-back, Tampa Bay and the whole Britt Reid situation. I mean, that was a gigantic distraction. I don't want to take away from, you know, the people that were hurt in that accident, but that with the timing of that was horrible for the Chiefs in regards to preparing. And I mean, you talk about distraction for the coaching staff as well. As you said, there's a lot of time to have distractions pop up. You want to limit those distractions. And I think sometimes we forget about the distractions the Chiefs are dealing with. So many people focus on left tackle, right tackle are hurt. Mahomes was running for his life. But Matthew, you were covering it back then, obviously. That was a factor, was it not? The Chiefs had those distractions then, and I would imagine they're trying to eliminate any kind of distraction they have this time around.
Yeah, I mean, it was hard to really understand what was going through everybody's mind in a situation like that. And, you know, and I remember talking about it, you know, from both sides of it. You know, was it something that was going to affect everybody? You know, during the game, I mean, I could certainly see the players who were a bit more distant from the situation, you know, it's maybe it's something that's back of mind for them. Mm-hmm. Maybe they were able to just completely shut it out because it's not their family. It's not, you know, it didn't happen to them. So, you know, as crushing as a situation that is and how much you feel for the victims, you know, hey, you got a job to do and you have to go forward with that. But that wasn't true for Andy Reid. I mean, that affected him deeply and personally. And so, yeah, I mean, I think you absolutely had questions about how he could handle that. And I remember saying this at the time, you know, I'm not sure that I've ever seen anyone who can compartmentalize as well as Andy Reid can. He does have, it seems like, just an innate ability to, and that's one of the things that obviously makes him a good CEO and a good coach, is the ability to shut things out and focus on things. But I also, at the same time, think it's, you know, hey, it's only human to understand that when he's gone through difficult situations that maybe he hasn't been very good at his job and he's had some bad days. But then again, I probably the ultimate reason the Chiefs lost that Super Bowl was that their entire offensive line was decimated.
Yes.
They had so many injuries. They didn't have both their starting tackles. I mean, that was... Mahomes ran for his life that day, and then Tampa Bay had a great game plan and executed it. So, you know, I hate to say that was the reason why they lost that game.
Sure.
And put it on that, because there were other factors, but there's no doubt. I mean, that was absolutely what you're talking about there. It was the kind of distraction of the worst kind that you don't want in a situation like that. And Kadarius Toney, I mean, it is life threatening. This is not a situation that's of the serious vein. But it's more in that nonsense category. It's just a dumb thing that you don't need to have happen, and disciplined teams don't have that. And that's why, you know, if Kadarius Toney doesn't go on that plane on Sunday, that's why. Because he doesn't have the discipline to be a part of this team.
Exactly. All right, two more before we let you go. Matthew Derrick, Chiefs Digest, joining us here today on The Ticket. Your biggest concern or concerns with the matchup with the Niners in Super Bowl 58, and then what is something you are looking at as a huge key for the Chiefs to come away with back-to-back Super Bowl championships?
I mean, you know, I could probably say the same thing to both of them, but I'll say for the first one for sure, what would be keeping me up nights if I'm Steve Spagnuolo is Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah.
That is the one difference maker. I mean, that is the guy that you have to stop. I mean, if you're as good as this Chiefs defense is, if you told me that Christian McCaffrey went for 200 yards and four scores, I'd say, well, sure, because he's Christian McCaffrey. And that's the one area, you know, run defense that the Chiefs have had some leaks sometimes. So the earlier, the better, the faster that they can contain McCaffrey in this game is going to go a long way towards determining, you know, their success. They can't let him get going. I mean, they've got to figure out a way to limit him. To me, the keys to success for the Chiefs, once again, I'm going to lean on the basic principles. They haven't always held true, but they held true absolutely on Sunday. Do not turn over the football. Win the turnover battle. Don't make stupid mistakes. Yep. And you know, and the Chiefs were 3-0 in turnovers against the Ravens. Ravens, I think, had 8 penalties. The Chiefs, 3. Chiefs didn't have any drops. That's why they won the game. You have another offensive performance like that against the 49ers, and you make sure that Christian McCaffrey doesn't beat you, you've gone back-to-back.
How many times have we said over the last few years, the biggest opponent for the Kansas City Chiefs is looking them in the mirror? It's themselves. And when they cut down on those mistakes, the drops, the penalties, the turnovers, whatever the case may be, they're pretty doggone tough to beat, and they've proven again here in the playoffs. All right, time for the off-the-wall question from Matthew Derrick at Chiefs Digest. You know, there are a lot of people that are tired of Taylor Swift and seeing Taylor Swift on television, even though it's not for very long a period of time, and they've even documented it. But what celebrity are you tired of seeing when you watch sports? And I'll give you a moment to think about that because, you know, Taylor Swift is a beautiful young lady who's popular. She's amazing talent, and people go nuts and get mad about all that. But yet Jason Kelce takes his shirt off, looks for attention, jumps out of a suite, chugs a beer, and he's applauded, and let's go ahead and make shirts with Kelce and all this and memes. And there are celebrities that are shown a lot. And, you know, Lakers with Jack Nicholson, you know, Spike Lee at a Knicks game. We've seen all kinds of celebrities showing at various sporting events. So this is not something new, but I guess it's because it's a popular, amazing, young, talented woman. A lot of people have a problem with it, mainly men, it seems like. For me to answer the question, Spike Lee. I've never understood the fascination with Spike Lee. For the love of God, the guy isn't like some star actor. He's a director, okay? And I always enjoyed the Reggie Miller turning and the choke sign. I thought that was hilarious, and I did enjoy that. So that made Spike sit down. But I when I see the Knicks games, I don't watch a lot of Knicks games, but it's like, dear Lord, I don't need to know about Spike Lee. Why is he so freaking popular? So what about you? Is there a celebrity that gets shown during television that you get tired of seeing?
Really good question, and you know, and part of it, I fit into the category you're kind of talking about there, which is, you know, if you're upset about Taylor Swift being on your TV,
yeah,
I mean, what does it matter?
Exactly.
I mean, you know, I mean, why does it affect you?
Yes,
she's like one of the most popular people on the planet. If she's not your cup of tea, that's fine. Most people do like her, so you know, I mean, it's no big deal. I mean, there's TV shows that I may not love, but I get promotions for them every single week. You know, hey, a brand new episode of this week. I mean, I don't get upset and throw my remote at the TV and say, right. Hey, CBS, stop telling me to watch this show I don't want to see.
Right.
But the only one that fits in that category for me right now, I mean, like I said, hey, if they're going to show celebrities or if there's celebrities on TV or anything, it's okay. I'm just glad that it seems like there's a lot less Aaron Rodgers commercials because Aaron's jumped the shark.
Yes.
I mean, he's gone to a different place now and is just such a smug weirdo. And I just cringe every time he's on TV. So the fact that he's on TV less now and, you know, they don't have the State Farm commercials with him and Patrick anymore.
Yeah.
I'll take the ones with Patrick and Andy Reid any day of the week over anything with Aaron Rodgers.
I agree with you 100% on that. That's a good answer. And also along the lines where you say you get tired of promotions and shows, I have to admit, I'm pretty close to throwing my remote every time CBS talks about Survivor. I'm like, when is that show going to die? 26 years or something? I thought that would be a short-lived reality show, and they still promote that every time. Tonight on CBS, I'm like, dear Lord, are they running reruns? They're still new? What? How can you make that show new every year? It's a bunch of people stuck on some island with a whole bunch of cameras, and they live fine, by the way. But it's funny that you bring that up. So I'm going to start being that guy and complain about the promotional aspects instead of worrying about Taylor Swift. So you just help me with that.
I am 100% behind you on that one.
Hey, man, how can people read your work and follow you as you cover Super Bowl 58, the Chiefs and the Niners?
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of stuff on the site. So you can go to ChiefsDigest.com, find everything, the podcast, everything that's on YouTube. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Derrick. But going to have a lot of videos next week. Of all the players we can get from opening night through all the media availability. So go to Chiefs Digest on YouTube. You'll find it all. But ultimately, ChiefsDigest.com. You can find everything you need right there.
Matthew did a wonderful job. We appreciate taking the time out of your busy weeks. Have a great job. Do a great job. I know you will have fun with all of this, because I think we all take this for granted a little bit. And who knows, someday we'll be complaining that the Chiefs can't even win the division. But for now, we're going to enjoy the ride and enjoy covering Super Bowl 58. Thanks again, as always.
There you go. You couldn't say any better myself. Take care. It's always good to talk to you.
Matthew Derrick, Chiefs Digest.